This is Taiwan Bound, the English language podcast of Tel Aviv University. Please welcome your host, Ido Aharoni, Tel Aviv University's graduate, member of the Board of Governors, lecturer, writer, and veteran diplomat.
Welcome to yet another episode of Taiwan Bound. I'm Ido Aharoni, your host, and today it is my pleasure to host in our studio Michal Ziegelman.
Hi, Ido. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you for making the time to be with us here in the studio. And we're very excited to host you here. And for the benefit of our viewers and listeners, let me tell you a little bit about Michal. Michal, who holds the Master's of Science, is a lecturer at Tel Aviv University's esteemed College School of Management. And she is a lecturer in a program called LAHAV, which is executive training program. So she gets a chance to talk to top executives in the Israeli market.
Yes, absolutely.
And in addition to that, she's also teaching at the Adelson School of Entrepreneurship at Reichman University. And she's a member of the innovation team of the Israeli Chamber of Information Technology, ICIT. And there's a very long list of things. But the reason why we invited her, not only because she's one of us, a lecturer at Tel Aviv University, but because she is the founder and the CEO of Duality, an Israeli strategic consulting company dedicated to helping organizations grow and prosper in disruptive markets. And we live in the age of disruption.
Yes, absolutely. The age of COVID and all other disruptions.
Yeah, so before we jump into the subject matter of your expertise, and we want to hear all about your system because I think it's more relevant than ever.
It's a pleasure.
Tell us about your upbringing and how you ended up doing what you're doing.
Okay, so I was born and raised in Tel Aviv. My early years were probably no different than many other Israelis of my generation. My father was an architect and my mother was a stay-at-home mom. As a child, I was very interested in science, but also, of course, like all Israelis, liked being in nature. I was driven by curiosity, which to this day has never abated. After high school, I was in a program that put me in university before my mandatory military service. I received my BA in physics, which I then went on to use during my service in the Air Force.
So you were one of those geniuses that were handpicked from high school because, I remember.
More a curious child.
No, I remember how frustrating it was for people like me to meet people like you, the people that were selected. So... So you developed an interest in physics.
Yes.
And you applied that in the army. Can you say a few words about that? Is it something you can share?
Yes, of course. I will start a little bit earlier when my passion for science sparked. It sparked at a very early age, around 5 or 6 years old, when my mother told me the story of the scientist Marie Curie.
Wow.
I was fascinated by the idea of becoming a researcher, and for my 6th birthday, while most of my girlfriends got Barbie dolls, I asked for a professional microscope. That's how my first laboratory was established. And my interest in science has never stopped since then. In high school, I chose physics and math as my core subjects, and it became clear that my academic path would be in science and later in physics. Tel Aviv University was my academic home. So in the army service, during the army service, I applied physics laws, especially mechanics, in Air Force simulation, which was very exciting for me. I think that's the first time that I met myself thinking about how to apply the rules and laws of nature in everyday life. In that case, it was in the army service and the topics, the relative topics. But later, it went on in searching how to bring those laws to everyday life in business.
Now, your entire business approach, which we will talk about, is a combination of two things that are not that you could say are counterintuitive, right? The first
Absolutely.
Is the need to always have a strategy, which means to have a long-term organizing principle to guide everything that you do. And then simultaneously to be able to improvise and maneuver.
Yes.
At the same time you're doing that. So what seemingly looks like two contradicting forces are actually the key to success and to the ability to manage crisis.
Yes, absolutely. I would say that it began a little bit earlier, finding the connection, realizing the connection between physics and business and leadership, or between art and science in general. So in general, physics, the study of matter, motion, energy and force, deals with the basic and fundamental laws of nature and how systems interact. It was during my MSc research when I realized that all systems, including organizations, communities, economies, are what I call natural systems, and as such are governed by the very same laws as ecosystems in nature. Now, this event, this insight was an eye-opening for me, because what does it really mean? It means that phenomena like constant change, uncertainty, chaos, unpredicted events, etc., are inherent in business and economic environments the same way they are inherent in nature. So the meaning is that change and disruption are inevitable. Even more, change is a hallmark of life, because let's think, for example, of companies like Nokia and Blockbuster, and that did not manage to change and innovate. They, like many others like them, became obsolete and died. So the basic insight here is that order, together with disorder, are the natural inherent duality of all systems, both in nature and in business.
So change is the only permanent.
It's only permanent. That's right.
And so how do you prepare to, obviously, I mean, we are still under the influence of the watershed moment of October 7th of 10-7. Obviously, it's impossible, maybe it is possible, for systems to be prepared for things like that. So how do you do that in practice? How do you bring the two elements? How does the duality look like in practice?
Okay, a typical duality program is an executive training program, usually formatted as a course of 4 to 6 sessions or as a 1 to 2 day workshop. These workshops focus on management topics like redefining strategy, accelerating innovation, improving competitiveness with a focus on disruptive and uncertain environments, these environments that we live and know today. Their purpose is to broaden the traditional management perception and to make use of a unique set of tools of the bimodal management method that I developed during my physics research and later during my business in Duality Company, and to make use of these tools to enable leaders and executives take them later into their life and to solve contemporary disruptive challenges.
So let's take a couple of, you know, you mentioned a couple of examples. You mentioned, I believe, Nokia and Blockbuster. To that, I could add, you know, Kodak and
many like them.
And BlackBerry. And there's so many companies that were on the top of their games. And they eroded because they could not foresee the changes. So let's use one of those case studies to analyze what they could have done differently. And so what is it on an organizational and even on a societal level that a society or an organization can do to really force themselves to be mentally attuned to changes?
Okay, this brings us to talk a little bit about the essence of the bimodal management model, which I developed. The bimodal management model, as we can see from its very name, involves two different styles of competence, planning and agility. Planning encompasses a set of skills such as setting clear goals, strategy, measurement, analytics, risk control, etc. Skills that are very well established in traditional management concept. The other mode, the second mode, agility, involves skills like such as recognizing recognition, network mindset, risk taking, adaptability, flexibility, etc. While the planning mode is well known in traditional management perception, the agility mode is addressed much less in the conventional management perception. But the point is that these tools are crucial for leaders and managers to respond effectively in today's challenging environments. So the bimodal management model suggests that leaders and executives need to apply both modes, planning and agility, simultaneously to respond effectively in a disruptive and ever-changing environment.
Now, what you're saying is that there are plenty of people that write about and teach how to plan. Much fewer people are teaching how to think, you know, creatively and to develop this agility that you're talking about. Is it something that you can teach people how to do?
Of course. Let's say that, first of all, we are used to think about Israelis as very good in improvising and less good in the long-term thinking. While, in my opinion, the situation is that Israeli businesses often operate in a survival mode, prioritizing the long-term solutions and the urgent over the important. And I think that it's not because we don't appreciate or we don't acknowledge the long-term thinking. I believe that managers, if managers had the practical tools and clear strategy to deal with disruption and change, they will be free to develop their long-term thinking. I think Israeli managers and business managers in general, they understand very well the need to develop a long-term strategy, because after all, most traditional management training focus exactly on that point. So the problem is not a lack of understanding, I think. In my humble opinion, I believe that the problem is a lack of practical tools to deal with chaos and disruption. And that's exactly what the bimodal management does. It equips management with a set of practical and highly effective tools to deal with constant change. These tools become an everyday part of their management agenda, and they are applied on a continuous basis, ensuring that urgent matters are consistently addressed.
Now, this is the Israeli culture, right? So you described very, I think, accurately what's happening in Israel. In Israel, people are very strong in improvising, making decisions as we go along. And I think that's why Israeli first responders are so effective. And we saw that after 10/7. And that's why recovery in Israel is so quick. And that's why Israeli communities are so resilient. I remember during the high days of the Second Intifada, guests that would come to visit were amazed how quickly Israelis recover after bombings and attacks and so on. What's happening elsewhere in other cultures? Let's talk about maybe the North American culture or the European culture.
Also, when we think of other cultures, countries like Singapore and UAE come to mind as small countries like Israel that excel in the long-term thinking. So let's see in UAE, they created a new role, the Minister for Artificial Intelligence. This is part of their 2031 AI strategy, artificial intelligence strategy. Now, I would love to see Israel defining its AI strategy for the long term, for the upcoming decade. In Singapore, if we see what's happening there, they choose the best people, the best experts in economics, pay them huge salaries to put them as top people in government agencies. Again, this is part of the long-term strategy. Singapore is also known for its robust innovation ecosystem, supported by government policies, academic institutions, and a very strong startup culture. Now, Israel can learn here also how to nurture innovation ecosystem supported by government support for startups to become an innovative leader and compete in the global market.
Now, your system is allowing managers to find this equilibrium, this balance, right, between the two.
Yes.
What are the tools that you would recommend to any leader of an organization, of a society, of an economy, to introduce ways to be innovative? Because this is what I see from my point of view, and I'm working with very large companies, even companies that were founded on a very innovative DNA, like a technology company. Once they grow, they become a bureaucracy. And the definition of bureaucracy is that sometimes procedure overrides substance. In other words, the procedure becomes more important than the actual reason why the company exists. And what can be done in organizations to reintroduce innovative thinking in large organizations?
So that's a very interesting question. We can see an example from Amazon, for example. I think the bimodal concept or the duality concept is embedded in Amazon leadership philosophy, which focuses on one hand on the long-term thinking and strategy that shows up in working backwards and starting every development with the press release, the future press release. But at the same time, they excel in maintaining the culture of day one. Every day is day one, and customer obsession, which requires a very high level of agility from an organization to hold these two modes together. And that's exactly the essence of the bimodal management model, how you develop your agility as a strategy, and apply it on an everyday basis, on a regular basis, and at the same time, simultaneously, driving your long-term objectives.
And so I think when you mentioned the day one philosophy is that every day it's as if it's the first day of the company.
Yes, like a startup, and it becomes more and more challenging when the company is grown up, as you say. Now, innovation, we know very good that all kind of innovation is disruptive for the organization. It's necessary to compete in today's disruptive and digital and ever-changing world. But at the same time, innovation is disruptive, and the organization must be willing to address and to deal with this disruption and this changing minds and challenging basic assumptions and so on in order to innovate.
Now, in your work with organizations, what would you say is the number one internal obstacle in the process of introducing your model?
The first thing, I believe, is acknowledging that we live in a complex environment. in a network world that there are so many changes and so many disruptions that are interconnected. And once the organization understand and the management and well understand the meaning of a complex system, that every change is a beginning of another change, and you cannot control changes, and you cannot avoid disruptions, and you cannot avoid the competition. So if you don't step forward, you really actually go backward. And we have no other choice but to innovate. But it starts with a recognition of the complexity of our environments and with recognition of global changes, global trends, to be very aware on a constant basis, not just once or twice a year when the management sit together, but to build to define the future objectives, but to be aware of these changes and the global trends on a regular basis.
Now, AI causes a lot of fear and confusion, and people don't really understand what it is. They hear from pundits that it could be a force for good, but also they hear all those bleak assessments, how AI could completely disrupt our lives and create chaos, unparalleled chaos in the history of humankind. How do you communicate that to managers? Because I know that a big part of your work is to prepare organizations to deal with the reality that will be dominated by machine learning, artificial intelligence.
Yes, absolutely. I think AI is a huge opportunity to humanity in general and to businesses, but at the same time it's a huge and new threat. And leaders, business leaders, should be aware of both of them. So I think part of the discussion would be opportunities and threats, and being aware of the ethical threats and data privacy and so on. So this is one point, to be aware of both of them, the threats together with the opportunities. Another thing that we see a lot today, that so many businesses adopt AI practically. They adopt AI applications to make their lives and business more effective, more productive, to automate processes. It can be a huge benefit for the short term, but thinking on the long-term objectives, the adoption of AI should be strategic, a strategic process. An organization must think about the long-term objectives, to explore how AI can improve these objectives, and to be in accordance with the strategic objectives of the organization, and make a strategic process. Part of this strategic process would be analyzing threats and the ethical aspects and the social aspects and how it affects employees and so on. What I want to say is that the adoption of AI into an organization is a strategic process. Unfortunately, most of the processes that I see today are tactical. We adopt one or two or other AI application, and yes, we are more productive. We improve our customer service. But if we think for the long run, it should be a strategic process.
Now, you mentioned the strategy versus tactics. And, you know, many of our viewers and listeners are interested in having a clearer definition of the differences between the two. And I know that at least in Israel, there's a great deal of confusion between the meaning of strategy and tactics. And I think it has a lot to do with the fact that many Israelis served in the army and the army is all about details, and the army is all about, you know, checklists and so on. They tell you that God is in the details and so on. And it's very easy to lose sight of the big picture. So we know that not all important decisions are strategic decisions. As you said, there's a tendency to prioritize the urgent over the important.
Especially in a disruptive environment.
Exactly. So how would you clarify the difference between the two for our viewers and listeners?
If we think of the strategic aspect, strategy is concerned and strategy deals with the organization long-term objectives. Where do we want to go? What is our mission? What's important for us to bring to the world? What's important for us to bring to our, what's the value? What's the value proposition for our customers? And once an organization is focused on the long-term strategy, it's about how do we achieve our long-term objectives in order to create value, to be competitive, and so on. The long-term short, the tactical aspect, deals with how sometimes how we put out fires and how we deal with the urgent, and especially today in our disruptive world, the urgent is takes a bigger and bigger part, because it's not a change once in a while. It's a constant change that happens all the time. That's why I believe that the bimodal management can bring value here, as it encourages the executives to develop agility on a regular basis, and at the same time, not instead of, at the same time, taking care and developing their long-term thinking. I think we must balance between the two of them in order to be productive and to create value for all.
Yeah. And I think that what you're saying is critically important for the well-being, the preservation, and the growth of companies and organizations. And, you know, we could have this conversation for hours, because, you know, as you could tell, I'm very interested in what you're doing, and I'm very interested in what's happening in organizations and how organizations are prepared to deal with change. But unfortunately, we're limited in time. I wanted to thank you for spending time with us here in the studio.
Thank you, Ido. It was my pleasure.
Thank you for educating us and teaching us about your really well-needed model. And hopefully our friends and the supporters of the universities heard your vision and will probably reach out and maybe sign up to become your students at the Kohler School of Management.
Thank you. Thank you. Great pleasure.
And to our viewers and listeners at home, I'd like to say goodbye from Tel Aviv until our next episode.